The movie The Whale is gaining critical acclaim around the globe. It stars Brendan Fraser, and it tells the story of a reclusive English teacher who's trying to reconnect with his teenage daughter. The movie is an adaptation of a 2012 play written by Sam Hunter, who also wrote the screenplay for this film. Our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, got to sit down with Hunter to talk about the new movie. Let's take a listen.
I want to talk a little bit about success and how you see success. This must be a very interesting time for you professionally and maybe even personally. I think success is an understatement when we see audiences in Venice and how they reacted. And I was there right with the audience in Toronto reacting with great emotion and sustained standing ovations. As you approach wide distribution for this film and all of the wonderful things that will probably come with it, how are you doing with all of this quite heady stuff?
You know, it's been a little easier than I first feared. I mean, it's been overwhelming, of course, but I've been kind of surprised that it feels a little similar in certain ways to like opening a new play, you know, which I've been through many, many times at this point. I mean, of course, it's very, very different. But, you know, like when I first wrote The Whale, I traveled around the country and, you know, to the first four productions and would do talkbacks and Q&As and things like that. And I'm kind of doing the same thing right now, hopping around from festival to festival. I mean, it's much bigger. I did a Q&A in London for 2,500 people. I mean, that was, you know, a little bit more than I'm used to. But I'm mostly just taking it day by day. You know, it also helps that I have a 5-year-old. You kind of have to be in the moment when you're parenting a 5-year-old. So, you know, I'll fly to these festivals and do all this stuff, but then I come home and here's my 5-year-old who still doesn't really understand what it is that I do. You know,
and wants breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, and just wants me to pick her up from school and take her to the playground, and you know, so that's all really nice.
So let's talk about The Whale and Charlie, the 600-pound Charlie, portrayed by Brendan Fraser, and certainly one of the most talked about performances in recent memory. So I've got to ask you about that process of finding Brendan Fraser and connecting him to Charlie. I'm curious about your own early reactions to this casting.
Yeah, I mean, Darren Aronofsky, who directed the film, is somebody who will not rush a project at all. And we started talking about this 10 years ago. You know, he saw the play when it was produced here in New York. That wasn't actually the first production. That was the second production. It was the world premiere was in Denver. Mm-hmm. But he saw it here in New York, and we had an initial conversation about making it into a movie, and those conversations continued. And throughout the years, I would sort of, you know, work on it here and there. And you know, there were many, many drafts. And throughout all of that, Darren was kind of quietly waiting for his Charlie, because he knew that that was the big thing he needed to find in order to make this movie. And it was right before the pandemic hit that Darren reached out to me and he said, "What do you think about Brendan Fraser?"
Wow.
You know, this is 8 years after we first started talking. And even though I know he had looked at probably thousands of different actors for this role, he had never brought a name to me. That was the first name he ever brought forward to me as an idea. And so I was like, oh, wow, he's really serious about this. And then Darren rented a little theater here in New York in the East Village. Mm-hmm. And we did a reading of the screenplay, much like you would do a reading of the play, with Brendan. And actually Sadie Sink was in that reading too, ended up playing Ellie in the film as well. And there was just something that happened 15, 20 minutes in. It was just like, oh my gosh, I think he has it. Like, you know, when you're doing a audition process, I think what you're looking for is somebody where you're like, oh, I think they can get there. You know what I mean? I think they have it in them. I think they can really bring it. But there was something that like Brendan already had it. It was like in the room from the get-go. And then about 2 weeks later, the pandemic hit and the world shut down. Wow. And that complicated everything again. But no, it was pretty evident that, you know, Brendan is one of those actors who can hold deep despair and deep joy and love at the exact same time. Yeah. And that's kind of what the part needed, was that complexity and that hard-won hope.
Well, let's talk about working with the Darren Aronofsky. So I guess, first off, if you can confirm this, I have heard of instances of some day of writing on set, filming or close to filming, and and some new truth reveals itself? Is it, indeed, did that happen where you add some new lines that just make more sense?
Yeah, definitely. There were, I was on set the entire time, and that included 3 weeks worth of rehearsals that we did before anybody turned a camera on. So I was very, very embedded in the process. And, both Darren and Brendan leaned pretty heavily on me in terms of like how we wanted to get it. And it was a joy for me too, because unlike a play, you can shoot it as many different ways as you want. And then you have this kind of like buffet of takes to choose from. And so I felt like a freedom there and sort of like, well, why don't we try it this way? Or why don't we see that? And I remember one specific day, Brendan was shooting a scene in which his daughter kind of cracks for the first time. And you can see that she actually does want a dad. And maybe there is a vulnerable girl inside. And I was watching the monitor, and like Brendan's eyes were just like lighting up in this just like rapturous joy. And I was talking with Darren in between takes, and I was like, what if we give him some language to like, you know, scaffold this, because it's what he's doing is incredible. And so I gave him some line. I forget exactly what the line is, but it's something about like I couldn't have asked for a better daughter or something like that. And then there were also moments. I remember one time, one of my things throughout the process was like, we cannot lose the humor that's inherent in the stage play, because it does go to such, I think it's a deeply hopeful film and a deeply optimistic film, but it goes to some pretty difficult places. And so along the way, it's so important that we do have some light and laughter. And we were doing one of the scenes, and I realized that I had cut a few lines from the play that were funny. And I was like, you know what? I think we can put those back in. Like, and so we tried a few takes with those lines in, and those ended up in the movie. So, you know, it was a pretty fluid process. It was exciting.
How long ago was the very first germ of the play? How far back does this go for you?
Really long time. I mean, really to right after I finished up graduate school. I was here in the city and I was teaching expository writing at Rutgers to college freshmen. I was in my late 20s. Both my then boyfriend, now husband, and I were both teaching there. And it's a really rigid course. It's all about how to write a good essay, how to depersonalize it, write objectively and clearly. And it was hard for me because I felt like I was teaching people to write in a way that is so opposite to how I work as a playwright, which is deeply personal. And there's a ton of myself in there. And so at a certain point in the semester, I just got a little desperate, and because the kids just hated the course so much. And so I just begged them to write something honest. And one of my students wrote me something that I will never forget. And it's a line that ended up into the play and in the movie, which was, I think I need to accept that my life isn't going to be very exciting. And there was just something about that really broke my heart. But there was just also something interesting about like me as a teacher trying to like genuinely connect with these kids in this kind of awkward way. And so I just decided I wanted to write a play about an expository writing teacher. And then it wasn't, and then I had a few false starts, and then it wasn't until I put some more personal stuff on the line and wrote a play that definitely was my most vulnerable play I'd written to date, about this. You know, I grew up gay in Idaho and I self-medicated with food for a good long while in my 20s. And so once I kind of added that to the mix, then the play really started to emerge.
So could you talk to maybe a few young writers who may be listening about going there, about going to a scary place in writing, especially earlier in one's career? That's a big deal.
And it's tough. I mean, I think, I had written a lot of plays up until that moment. I don't think I had been produced professionally. Maybe it was right around when I was starting to see my plays produced professionally. But in many ways, even though The Whale was by no means my first play, it was probably my 10th or 15th play, but it felt like my first play because it was the first time that I felt like I left the training behind a little bit and was just like, you know what, I just want to write something. I just want to tell a story I want to tell that's hard for me to write, that's scary for me to write, and maybe it's just for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's never going to see the light of day. And I think that, like, probably all of my best plays were written and from a place of, like, maybe this will never see the light of day, but I have to write it anyway.
And it's so interesting that you are now revisiting that moment that brought your career to a new plateau And now here's The Whale again, and there's this entirely new, different plateau for you.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, I've written a lot of plays at this point, and I've written a lot of plays since The Whale, but it's funny how The Whale has kind of been like the clothesline for my entire career so far. So this does kind of feel, yeah, like both the end of something and the beginning of something in a weird way. But it's exciting. Whatever it is, it's exciting. I'm not exactly sure what's on the other side of it, but we'll see.
In the few conversations I've had with folks about them really anxious to see this film and me not giving anything away, more than a few of them have probably read too many of the, I don't know, the liner notes or whatever you want to call them, because what I got from The Whale, and you referred to this, is hope. How sometimes it's nearly impossible to win or to keep optimism. Can you talk about that? Because I think that that was a real big reveal for me in this story.
Yeah, I mean, I had always written this play. I always knew I wanted to write this play from a sense of faith and hard-won hope. And I think the key thing is hard-won, because I didn't want to deliver any false platitudes or make easy answers. You know, this is a play. You can look at the structure of this entire play as five people desperately trying to save one another in very complicated ways, failing at it, then maybe succeeding. And even the end, which I agree with you, I think is all about hope.
Yep.
It's a very complicated place, which I think is real. I think like we live in incredibly cynical times. And I also think that it's really easy for cynicism to masquerade as sophistication or intelligence, when actually I believe in my bones that cynicism is cheap and easy. I mean, having faith in other people is way harder than thinking that the world is garbage. And I think that's the play and the movie in many ways about that fight, about that inability to let go of faith in other people.
Well, whether it is private or public conversation, indeed it's there. And there's that thing called award season. I mean, is that something that's just over there, like across the street for you? Or it's going to happen. The season's going to happen. You are a part of that conversation. Do you have any particular feelings about that? Do you embrace it? Do you say, oh, it is what it is, because there's not much you can do about it?
It's so new for me. You know, it's a world that is so, so new, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of glad that I don't know much about it, because I can meet it with kind of excitement and wonder and just kind of like whatever happens, happens. And I really mean that, because I never thought that I would be in a place like this. You know what I mean? Like, all I ever wanted to be was a working playwright who could make enough money to have a family. Mm-hmm. And health insurance. And I've had that, which has been like an incredible gift that I am deeply grateful for every moment of every day. The fact that I get to be, that this is what I can do for a living. It's a crazy gift. So like the other stuff is, I mean, it's great, but it just feels so far away or theoretical or something. It's hard for me to even wrap my mind around.
Well, I would think that the greatest gift is when this has wide release. I can't wait for more people to see it so I can have a lot of conversations with them about this. In particular, obviously, the lens that we look through here in Idaho, but it's an American story. My experience was I instantly recognized him.
Yeah, that's hopefully what it is that, you know, whatever prejudices or judgments that some people might bring to this film 7 minutes in, you know, largely due to Brendan's incredibly nuanced and lived in performance, those prejudices just begin to melt away. And that's always how I hoped the play would work. And I'm so happy that the film seems to be working in that way as well.
And that was author and playwright Sam Hunter talking about his new movie, The Whale, talking with our very own Morning Edition host, George Prentice. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.